Broadcast is now starting. All attendees are in listen-only mode.
Okay, hi everybody again. And this time, good afternoon maybe to people in the United States, or maybe good morning. And here it's early evening in Europe, and probably a lot of people in Australia and New Zealand may be asleep already. Now, we've been changing things around a little bit, and the reason is we decided that you were not, if you live in the United States or South America, you weren't having the opportunity to participate in the science of triangles webinars, because it just was occurring in the middle of the night for you. For most people, except maybe if you lived out on the West Coast, or maybe mountain time, maybe. So we had this morning the dissipation of glamour, and now at a similar time, 12 hours later, we have the science of triangles. Next week it will be reversed, and I still have to sort all that out. Now, what I've done is in the chat box, I put the following information. Let's see now here. The pre-full moon in Aquarius webinar is coming up. Gosh, I hope I did that correctly. Somewhere is my, yeah, here it is. Okay, I've got it now. Please just bear with me. The pre-full moon webinar is coming up on the 20th in the evening. Okay. And that's 8 p.m. GMT. And I think the very next morning, we actually have the full moon. So I've listed all this in the chat box. Now, this is a little bit out of, perhaps a little bit out of order, because actually this should go after the ingress. If you're interested in the ingress of the sun into Aquarius, our broadcast there, it's going to be a broadcast, not a webinar, is occurring about an hour ahead of time. It's more a meditation at 8:02 a.m. GMT, and about 57 minutes later, the actual ingress into Aquarius occurs. Then comes the pre-full moon that I just talked about. All of this is in your chat box, so just copy it out for yourself and you'll have it if otherwise you don't have it. Then the full moon is in the early morning of the 21st, and that's a broadcast again, not a webinar. And that takes the actual full moon is at 5:15:57 a.m. GMT, and so we'll begin the program at 3:45 a.m. GMT for those who are brave and hardy, but in other places it'll be easy for you, I suppose, in Australia and New Zealand, and I think in the United States possible. It's only the Europeans who would suffer there. And then, as you know, Tuya has been doing this sacred pentagram approach to the full moon, and that starts really tomorrow. So far, I have that down at 6 p.m. GMT. So that should be out of the way of other things. It's a broadcast. And again, just use your live link. It's always the same when we do a broadcast. We have one link for broadcasts. And of course, multiple links for webinars. It's a little harder, but we're trying to inform you in time. So all of this, hopefully, is right in the chat box, and just go in there and copy it. You know, cut and paste, and then you'll have it. So you can see there's quite a bit of work to do over the next next few days. And, you know, beginning, actually, if I put this in order, what is order? Okay. Relates to the seventh ray. Where is the seventh ray? Okay. So, it's over here, the 19th, and that starts tomorrow. Now everything, I think, is in order, and I will be offering also at some point that I can find the solar fire ritual in Aquarius, which is, as you know, music and meditation and oratory. It's different every time in a way because we meditate differently, but the musical pieces, of course, are consistent. So I haven't put that in yet, but I'll get that, you know, to you as soon as possible. Anyway, tomorrow we start the sacred pentagram approach. We do that four times. I don't think we do it on the day of the full moon itself. DK has given the three-day approach, the five-day approach, the seven-day approach, and we feel has very much emphasized the five-day approach, and that's how we're trying to present to you. All right, a lot of information at first. Now, let's just have a little alignment. There's a lot coming up here. And however many we are, I think, you know, at first, this is not yet realized by the people in the U.S. that they can't actually attend this. It's easy enough for the people in Europe, and you know, some are actually with us, some in Europe and in Australia, New Zealand are with us, and not too many Americans, even though this is, and South Americans, this is scheduled so that they can participate, and we hope that before long they realize that that is that that is the case. So we all come together in the silence. And we try to realize that the science of triangles is a very big science. It's solar, it's planetary, it's solar systemic, it is cosmic. It's not just related to little individuals such as ourselves, though it's very, very important for humanity's welfare that we do relate to each other in triangular formation. So we're studying some of the deeper energies. The science of triangles, you can imagine, has a lot to do with Libra, with the triangle itself, which is in a way the symbol of Libra, with the third or atmic plane, and with the science of esoteric astrology, which is coming in strongly, like all astrology, on the third ray. So we're in a section of the astrology book which deals for 100 pages with the science of triangles. It's very deep stuff. And along the way, you're certainly going to learn something about astrology. You know, some people are into esotericism and they do a good job in many, many regards, but they, you know, leave astrology out of the picture. They don't get into the study of it, but it's important when dealing with the science of triangles to study esoteric astrology along with it. And certainly we do meditate at the full moon knowing some things about esoteric astrology. Maybe we can't cover all that the Tibetan has written, you know, in a lifetime, and now he's going to write more. We can't even really wrap our minds around the secret doctrine entirely and what Blavatsky has written. We've been given an abundance of illuminating material. And we have enough to keep us moving forward and to help other people see things with greater clarity. So I just want to welcome some of you who have come here. I kind of do it once, you know, and then if you join later, well, just welcome. Okay, so welcome to Anna Marie and to Annette and to Antoinette and to Ario and to Frida. And I think Joe is over here. Okay. I do hope that like I say, I've put stuff in the chat box, and Joe is saying that maybe it's not in the chat, but there it is, you know. So just look at it, Joe, and see what I may have left out, okay? And I know I've left out the solar fire ritual, but I'll send out a notification for everybody for that sort of musical meditative experience. And so going on then, Karen in the United States, welcome. Martha, glad to see you. Napni, welcome. Nolene, and to you, and Tuya's here, as I would expect. And Winnie and Ann Veronica, welcome. And over here on staff and keeping me all glued together is R, Michael Stacy, and BL Allison. So welcome to everybody, and thank you for attending. Now, there are these important sections we're going to look at, but maybe I won't take too big a chunk tonight, or my night here, just enough. If we can get sufficiently confused on what I've given you, then that's going to be enough. Okay. And by the way, here, so many of these are actually, what can I say? They're broadcasts, right? The sacred pentagram, the full moon approach is a broadcast. The ingress of the sun is a broadcast. The pre-full moon, which I'm going to give as a webinar, and the full moon, actually, the next morning is a broadcast. And then when I give you the time for the solar fire ritual of Aquarius, that's going to be a broadcast. All right, let's move on then. And here we are. Now we're looking at certain triangles, right? Okay. And these are the triangles as seen in esoteric astrology. One that includes Shambhala, it's the Leo-Saturn-Shambhala triangle. Then one related to hierarchy, the Pisces-Uranus hierarchy triangle. And then one related to humanity, Capricorn-Mercury and humanity. And we see, we want to be able to look at these kinds of triangles and say, well, you know, what are they doing? You know, why are they important? And we can see DK is spending tens of pages on this chart that I think Joe created for me. You know, all the way from the Great Bear, Sirius, and the Pleiades on down, you know. So, as I say, these triangles can be seen in this chart. It's Leo, Saturn, and Shambhala. You know, we're leaving the Great Bear out of it. You know, but we'd have Great Bear, Leo, and Saturn. See, like that. But Leo, Saturn, and Shambhala. And then we start with the zodiacal sign, Pisces, Uranus, and hierarchy. And then, as relates to humanity, Capricorn, Mercury, and humanity. And, you know, probably we can even find the normal rulerships of these signs involved. Like, you know, maybe Neptune has something to say about this Pisces triangle, and maybe Pluto, and maybe Saturn has something to say about this Capricorn triangle, and with Leo, maybe Uranus, you know, because it's the hierarchical ruler of Leo. Well, all of these kind of seem like technicalities, but it's a language like anything else. And when you memorize the basics, the elements of a language, you can start putting things together. You can make words, you can make phrases, you can make sentences, and before you know it, it all starts to make sense. And eventually, if you're of that type, you can develop the kind of meticulous entirety that Master DK has in his amazing grasp of things. You know, he's been studying a long time and meditating a long time and practicing a long time, and he sets the example for us of what meticulous entirety really means, you know, kind of a Jupiter in Virgo idea. Now, going on, science of triangles. Okay, so triangle one, and we remember what that is. That's Leo, Saturn, Shambhala, right? Is produced by the interrelation of energies. Oh, here it is, from Leo, Saturn, and Shambhala. Let's just pause for a second. Just think about that amazing constellation in the sky when we look there and see Leo. You know, it does look like the lion. It's got the star Regulus and the star the Nebula, but maybe Regulus is more important, as the heart of the lion. He says there's a lot of occultism hidden in the names of these stars. So there it is, and sometimes we've seen Saturn even with the naked eye, but certainly through the photographs. You know, so just think for a moment. There is Leo, and here is this relatively minor deity, although great compared to us, this deity called Saturn, and here is a point of tension on the highest aspects of the cosmic physical plane called Shambhala. And at some point he tells us about the rivers and streams of force and how beautiful Shambhala really is. I think I've read it to you once before, but you know, let me just see if I can do a quick find on that. And I'd like all of you to have my AAB extracts, and I think we've talked about where you can get them. Shambhala. And, you know, here's just kind of a, do we see it? Sea of fire, ether's heart center, sea of fire, corresponds to heart described. Here we go. Here's how DK describes Shambhala. It is a world of pure energy, of light, and of directed force. I don't know what these things mean to us, but these are the words he uses. It can be seen as streams and centers of force. Now think about that. It can be seen by those who can see in this way, as streams and centers of force, all forming a pattern of consummate beauty. You know, the ultimate archetypes for the cosmic physical plane will be found in Shambhala, all potently invocative of the world of the soul below and of the world of phenomena still farther below. Ultimately, everything will be arranged down here according to the archetypes within Shambhala. It therefore constitutes, in a very real sense, the world of causes and of initiation. Let's just say causes in a higher sense than the causal body. So that's a very beautiful, I think, description. And page 293 in Dyna 2, I think, you know, you will want that. You will want that because gives us some connection. Otherwise, we're just using the word Shambhala, and we have no image whatsoever. All right. So anyway, Leo, Saturn, Shambhala. Its potency, the potency of this first triangle, because, you know, that's the idea, triangles affect other triangles. You know, it's not only the chakras affect other chakras, which they do, you know, whether low or high or high or low, but triangles affect triangles. Just think of that for a moment. So that when you have the six-pointed star of Solomon, you know, the upward pointing star and the downward pointing star are engaged with each other in a mutual effect. So its potency is naturally felt, the Shambhala triangle, more directly in the triangle of the hierarchy than in that of humanity. Remember, the triangle of the hierarchy here is Pisces, Uranus, and hierarchy. So we feel, you know, humanity or hierarchy is aspiring towards Shambhala. It hasn't really made it entirely. Let's see if I can go here. Remember this, right? the past, the present, and the future. In the present, hierarchy is reaching towards Shambhala. Look at that. But the two-way street has not been established, and here it is for the future. And Shambhala is reaching towards humanity, but the two-way street not established, nor between humanity and hierarchy, but eventually the arrows go in both directions. So this is a very somehow important diagram to show the kind of triangular balancing which will exist in just what is loosely called the future. I don't think it's any time soon, to tell you the truth, because in the seventh maybe in the seventh round or something of that nature, the Shambhala from high to low will be completely established. It's a long time. All right. Now let's see, where am I? Okay, and whoopsie. I just wanna find my place. Signs of triangles. There we go. Yeah, of course. Okay. So these three energies are sometimes called, in an effort to make understanding more easy, now think of it, the energy of triple energy of will. Now, this means we're not just looking at a triangle consisting of a zodiacal sign and a planet and an earthly center. We're looking at three zodiacal sources and their combination. The will of self-determination. Now, we understand that he tells us, that when the Leo individual reaches the Uranian phase, he is completely positive to his environment and self-determining. He's free inwardly, and he's not conditioned the way he is under Saturn. But okay, Saturn is the planet given in this chart, but we have to think about the hierarchical ruler, Uranus. It's the self-determination is very powerful when Uranus and Leo are together or in relationship. So the will of self-determination, what does that mean? Just think for a moment. There is a great freedom inside the inner recesses of any self-conscious being. And the freedom to choose. Now the choice comes under Saturn, of course, but the first ray monad of Uranus is much involved with the first ray as it comes through Leo. You can, according to the archetype, you can live according to the archetype which is set out by the mind of God and the God, the planetary logos, and is found on the higher planes of the cosmic physical plane and, of course, beyond. When DK tells us that there are 10 dimensions to cosmos, we have to realize that even in our most expansive maps, we're really only looking at two of those dimensions. So what the other things might be, I remember Tuya once did some kind of putting many pieces of paper together. It just ended up being the longest type of representation of the planes. But even though it went beyond our usual representation, I don't think it covered 10 dimensions. It would get unwieldy, almost impossible to deal with. All right, then, in this triple energy of will, the will to sacrifice in Pisces. So, of course, Uranus is the planet given as it relates to the heart center. And, usually when we sacrifice, it's because of a higher ideal or a higher configuration or a higher relationship, which Uranus defines. We see the way things are supposed to be, and we say, well, I can make the sacrifice to make sure that they turn out as the mind of God intends them to be. But of course, when we're dealing with sacrifice again, we want to deal with Neptune as one of the synthesizing planets. We give up our ring pass knot. We usually invest so much time and energy preserving our ring pass knot to make sure it doesn't fall apart in some way. But then Neptune starts to dissolve all that, and then who are we anyway? We discover that our identity is much larger than we once thought, because Neptune has dissolved that ring pass knot, and we're then willing to sacrifice or give up for the larger picture and our larger identity. Okay, the will to sacrifice, Pisces, the most powerful, ultimately, of the second ray signs in the zodiac and most fundamentally associated with Christ. The second ray may come maximally through Virgo right now, and the Gemini may be the head of the cosmic Christ, but it is finally Pisces, which is the great sign associated with the Christ force. And then, interestingly enough, the will to choose. Well, you can't escape the idea that mentality is involved in choice, and the idea of going back and forth or up and down, you know, you choose, and Mercury does that. But Saturn is the synthesizing planet of choice. So finally, when we look consciously at the alternatives, Saturn is involved. So you see what I've done here. I brought in the three synthesizing planets, Uranus, Neptune, and Saturn, even though in our diagrams here, we basically have Saturn, Shambhala, Leo, Uranus in relation to Pisces and hierarchy, and Mercury in relation to Capricorn and humanity. You know, you can't say to yourself, oh, well, I thought that this triangle was ruled by these planets. Well, other planets also receive their energy and convey them to our planet and humanity in different ways. Different triangles do different things. Pause on that for a moment. And they are valid. The different triangles can relate to zodiacal signs in a different way. So, you know, one day there's all this incredible interrelationship and we realize what it's all for. But we have to be very patient somehow, very patient as we assemble and understand gradually the interrelations between the various astrological factors, whether they're all on the same level like signs, or whether it's like a sign and two planets, or two planets and a sign, or whether it's somehow a sign, a planet, and a planetary center like Shambhala or hierarchy or humanity. There's just all kinds of triangles that are possible, and each one of them has its highest potentials and can convey something to us. Not all triangles are of equal importance to us at this time. And that's really important. I mean, we can't, you know, it's just such a plethora, you know, there's a huge number of triangles, and DK for our edification singles out certain triangles as being really, really important, you know. I mean, you might think of here's a triangle, Cancer, Leo, Aquarius, okay? So basically, mass consciousness, individual consciousness, group consciousness. That's one way of looking at it. I could name so many. But the thing to do is to analyze what is the relationship. And it's always in a 1-2-3 relationship with a rotation having occurred, so one of the aspects is on top. Okay, so this is the triple energy of will as it is looked at in this relationship that he spent tens of pages describing. Because the Shambhala force lies behind the other two triangles, okay, that makes sense, just like the monad lies behind the soul and the personality, and is the recipient of energy from the three constellations above. So somehow all these are found in Shambhala. Shambhala is the place where the law of assembly occurs. Now think of that, the law of assembly. Many energies come into Shambhala, not all, and they are gathered together and put in archetypal form for the utilization of the different forms of life which emanate from Shambhala, including humanity. So the Shambhala triangle lies behind the hierarchical and the human triangle. And all of this blending them into the united expression of will, and thus proves to be the custodian of divine purpose. Somehow the Shambhala force, which we've been receiving impacts from lately, you know, 1825 and what's the other one here, 1825 and 1975 and the year 2000, you know, three great impacts. Shambhala was also involved in the wars, but maybe not in the same category of impact. So anyway, behind this Shambhala force lies these other greater beings and their energy. Because, you know, the energy of a constellational lord is huge compared to the energy of Shambhala. And if you don't believe there are such things as lords of constellations, just look it up in the astrology book and you'll see it. The lord of the constellation, what, Aries, or the lord of the constellation, Libra, these have to be great beings. And we are coming in touch with them through the signs of the zodiac. So all of these energies of the will are found in Shambhala, and they are blended into a united expression of the will. And because of this, this blending and Shambhala force proves to be the custodian of divine purpose. Sometimes people wonder what comes first, will or purpose. In my estimation, although I can see it from other points of view, the great will sustains all, and the purpose is related to the second ray aspect of the first ray, because purpose always seems to have a pattern, and ray two is the ray of the divine pattern. Okay. The triangles, of which hierarchy and humanity are the expression, are becoming more responsive to Shambhala, and I showed you that in these arrows, you know, and how it's all moving towards a two-way street between each of the three points. The hierarchical center, greatly so, and the human center, gradually so. We just can't, you know, take the Shambhala energy the way the great beings in hierarchy can contact and assimilate it. We just have to be humble in that regard when the Shambhala force comes through without sufficient soul love. You see the disaster of powerful magicians who are extremely destructive of the divine plan, and you saw that in the Second World War recently, at least particularly so. Okay, so again, the triangles of which the hierarchy and humanity are expression. You should memorize these, you know, like Pisces, Uranus, hierarchy. Capricorn, Mercury, humanity. Leo, Saturn, Shambhala. You know, have them in your mind so that you don't have to become encumbered, you know, looking all the time for them. So the The job of hierarchy is to look toward Shambhala simultaneously and look toward humanity while looking toward Shambhala. It's a great work, and they have to split their attention. Humanity does too. We who are hopefully members of the new group of world servers, or nearly so, or aspiring to be so, we look principally towards hierarchy, and then we look towards humanity. So there's the triangle there, isn't there? Hierarchy, new group of world servers, humanity, right? So, you know, we can see how the triangles will be working out. And of course, the big triangle is Shambhala, hierarchy, humanity. The first or fundamental triangle, okay, now that's going to be Leo, Saturn, Shambhala, is occult in the truest sense of the word. You know, whenever you're dealing with the first ray, the secret of all the revelation and of the esoteric schools in occultism is along the first ray line. It has to do with the revelation of the will of the great beings in whom we live and move and have our being. So this first or fundamental triangle, think of it, Leo, Saturn, Shambhala, okay, is occult in the truest sense of the word to even the trained occultist and to the majority of the members of hierarchy. Now, you know, we can't walk in the doors of Shambhala at will, and even initiates who are not of the sixth degree in their Chohanic development cannot do so either, unless maybe under special arrangement by the, according to their ray, if it's a first ray master. So just think, this is an occult triangle, even to those who have achieved the fifth degree. So Shambhala is deeply recessed in occultism. And if we try to throw that word around and say, okay, now let's all align with Shambhala, good. Now let's align with hierarchy, good. You know, we're just fooling ourselves. We have to approach with the utmost reverence and respect and sensitivity and stillness, and always in group form. Therefore, because of this, only a few points can be mentioned in connection with it, as there's little to be found in even the advanced disciple with which to reach real understanding, and the information must perforce remain academic and theoretical. But that's good. I mean, you know, even in White Magic, he says, learn now the academics of magic, and when I give you the true formulas later in future centuries, you'll be much more ready to use them. So who is the advanced disciple? Maybe the disciple of the second degree. It depends on how you look at it. The initiate, the true initiate, begins at the third degree. And what we will find is an entry-level initiate at the third degree, not an advanced initiate, which would be more fourth degree or fifth degree. So now let's look at these. Yet again, he's going to describe some of these sources in this very important Shambhalic triangle. Now look, you say, why are we studying all this? Because the will of God, the planetary logos, is really making an impact now. And we have to cultivate within our own nature the will. And we don't know much about it at all. Like I say, DK is giving us a dual curriculum, sometimes a triple curriculum. He gives us the curriculum of the soul based on love, but he gives us the curriculum of the will, which reaches into the triad and towards the monad. So when we look at Leo, which is the will of the self-conscious entity to manifest, holds the clue or key to the entire problem of self-conscious being. You know, I am that and that am I am that I am. These mysterious phrases which point to our true identity, and the power of Leo gives us the entrance, the way of identifying with these higher states of being, and then finding our true identity. I am that, and that am I. Okay, whether it is the will to be, that's the highest aspect of the will, in a sense, the will to be. Whether it's the will to be of a planetary logos, of a group, or of a man. He's left out certain things, but okay, you know, those are logos, group, or man. So it's the will to manifest on the in a lower place as oneself. Think about that for a moment. The will, you know, the will to be, to continue to be what one is, and to manifest that being in lower areas of vibration and relationship. The self-consciousness of man, see, you know, think about the great mystery of identity. Now, somehow Shambhala is holding that until we find out what is the monad, what is at the heart of the monad. Not the monadic vehicle, but what is at the heart of the monad, we don't really know who we are. So the self-consciousness of man is inherent in the planet itself, which is the life expression of a fully conscious being. Well, you know, we have a planetary logos. The planet is the life expression of this planetary logos, and man imitates and reflects this kind of self-realization. When you really look at it, you know, Yogananda, when he started the self-realization fellowship, it was a profound idea, you know, like, which self are we talking about? Probably some of you may have been to his various centers in California, maybe elsewhere too, I don't know. Anyway, the self-consciousness of man is inherent in the planet itself, which is the life expression of a fully self-conscious being. The planet is the life expression of a fully self-conscious being, great as far as we are concerned, and a very relatively tiny being when compared to the solar logos and cosmic logoi and others. The use of the will through the Shambhala Center, now remember, we're not knowing much about will at all, through the Shambhala Center involves the conscious use of that energy by the planetary logos. And the planetary logos, you know, is in a way greater than Sanat Kumara. You can tell that. Sometimes the planetary logos is called Sanat Kumara, but basically, Sanat Kumara is an extension of the planetary logos. When you think about it, if Sanat Kumara presides over the third, fourth, and fifth initiation, but not over the sixth and seventh, then those beings that preside over the sixth and seventh have to be in some occult manner greater than he. So a mysterious being that says has to remain unnamed, says the Tibetan, presides over the sixth initiation. And then finally, the planetary logos in fullness presides over the seventh initiation. And that is a greater being than Sanat Kumara, who is an emanative extension of the planetary logos. Okay, so the use of the will through the Shambhala Center. And that center is, I think, not just found on our globe. I think there are, you know, somehow Shambhala centers on every globe and within every chain, and finally on the scheme level. And that's mysterious how it can subdivide. Involves the conscious use of that energy by the planetary logos, the will of the planetary logos. This is evoking response today from the world of men in terms of will. We see it, both higher and lower. I remember when I was looking, you know, maybe it was 1933, and there was this German Nazi filmmaker by the, Lenny Yeah, I'm gonna maybe Raffenschneider or something like that. It's not exactly correct, but anyway, it was called The Triumph of the Will. And it was put out there as propaganda by the Nazis, and it really, everything was on the first aspect, everything. And the magnificent Teuton, which was the ideal of those people, was all on the first ray. And everything on the second ray was considered to be weakness, you know. And of course, that's why they failed, because there was no true second ray, the greatest of all the rays, at this time on our planet and ongoingly in our solar system. So anyway, the use of the will, it starts at a very high level on our planet with the planetary logos. Of course, it's probably stimulated from the solar logos. The certain men, certain people are responding to it, and they are lower types and higher types. The willful, self-willed man of the world is apt to be more responsive to this Shambhala force than is the disciple or the aspirant, because they are more attuned to the gentler vibration of the hierarchy. Now, every one of Hitler's group, was it seven around him or six, you know, something like that. They all were responding negatively to the Shambhala force, and somehow in their nature as a subray, the first ray was always there with them. And they brought in the first and third ray, you know, will and intelligence, but no love, maybe some lot of devotion, but no love. I've earlier told you that this Leo force from Shambhala, now notice how Leo comes in and through Shambhala. See, it's not just isolated by itself, it's an inflow, is finding direct entry into the human center instead of indirectly via the hierarchy, as has hitherto been the case. And, you know, obviously the implications of a direct Shambhala impact, which we have been experiencing, and we're still living in the influence of the year 2000 Shambhala impact. He hasn't really told us whether the Great Conclave involves the Shambhala impact, but he'll tell us more when he starts to write again in 2025, and we'll see how the Shambhala force has been used, but largely misused by the men of will without sufficient love. He did say, interestingly, that Ataturk, the great reformer of Turkey, used the Shambhala force in a very unselfish way, in a way that was truly disinterested in his own person. He had a few minor problems as a personality. He was a Pisces and a Scorpio rising, but he was really an example of how to use the Shambhala force. Maybe Stalin was not such a good example, and Hitler was a terrible example. And then we have to know, you know, with Churchill and FDR, two great disciples, how did they use it? Were they examples of the Shambhala force? Or did they mix a lot of the hierarchical impulse in with it? And I think they did. I certainly, when I think of FDR, I think of a second ray monad and a first ray soul. Just that's how I think of Lincoln too. Second ray monad, first ray soul. Not sure about Churchill. There was a lot of brilliance in him and, you know, amazing historical ability, and maybe the third ray was involved on a very high level. Okay, so this is what he says about Leo in this Shambhalic triangle. Then he moves on to Saturn, and he says, Saturn, this energy is primarily concerned with presenting opportunity to the hierarchy and its affiliated, I'm sorry. Excuse me, presenting opportunity to the hierarchy and its affiliated disciples. Well, I wonder, you know, when we're under Saturn, how much opportunity we feel. If we are of the hierarchical state of mind, we certainly do feel the opportunity, but sometimes it's just really heavy. And so many things just seem to stop in their tracks. but at least they cause you to examine closely what is going on. And that's so, you know, it's so extremely important. We can't be running all the time. We have to examine judiciously. Think about Libra and how powerful Saturn is there. And as the sign of judgment, we have to examine judiciously all that is emerging around us and all that is occurring in our lives. And unless we actually stop and look, which is the great Saturn thing, we're not going to get the most out of circumstances or of ourselves. The phrase that Saturn is the planet of discipleship. Now, think about that. That's your Saturn in a particular sign, whether it's a ruler or not, and in a particular house. How is that Saturn working out to potentially improve your discipleship practice? It ought to be something that every one of us pauses with, looks at our chart, and says, okay, the planet of discipleship, how is my discipleship aided and abetted by the presence of Saturn as it is in my chart? Think just for a moment. If you know your kind of chart by memory. So everyone should analyze his or her Saturn quite dramatically, intently, to see what's really going on there and how it can promote advancement into the hierarchy, which is basically under Capricorn, given that it is the major sign of the third initiation, and one doesn't really enter the hierarchy in any full sense until that initiation is taken. So the phrase that Saturn is the planet of discipleship is basically true, because ordinary average man, except in group formation, does not come so potently under its influence. Well, there are things that happen. There are oftentimes external things, but maybe it doesn't influence consciousness quite so much. In other words, the karmic factor is there, but the dharmic factor, aligning the individual with the divine plan, may not be there at all for the average non-aspiring individual. For the hierarchy as a group is facing a great crisis of approach to Shambhala. Now, the closer they get to Shambhala, the closer they get to humanity. And this is through a decision, taking on, you know, burden me still more, taking on a duty that they sense is necessary if the Christ's intention and the intention of Sanakumar and so forth and the will of the planetary logos is to be manifest. They have to make this decision in that line. So Saturn is really the planet of decision, as you know. So for the hierarchy as a group is facing a great crisis of approach to Shambhala, analogous to that confronting humanity today as it seeks approach and contact with hierarchy. So that's it, you know. We may learn about the monad, and that's important, but until we have fulfilled some important connections with the soul, we're just not ready to take on the spiritual triad and the monad, which projects that triad as a personality. Okay, thus, there are two interrelated crises affecting both humanity and the hierarchy. Now remember, humanity is a little bit connected with Shambhala. Shambhala is trying to, you know, raise some kind of understanding of the will in humanity, but it's really hierarchy that is getting the much fuller radiation of Shambhala energy. So there are two interrelated crises affecting both humanity and the hierarchy, and these should produce, if correctly effected, that which is called alignment or integration, resulting in a far freer inflow of divine energy. Now, always watch divine and spiritual. Does he use them meticulously in all cases? I don't know, but divine has to do with the monad and the second and first plane, and the spiritual has to do with the third, fourth, and higher fifth plane, and it's less intense than divinity. Divinity is of the monad, and spirit, at least to spiritual, is more of the soul. So both of these approaches, we human beings to hierarchy and hierarchy to Shambhala, which are in the nature of magnetic or attractive pulls, let's say the higher is really, you know, invoking the lower, are conditioned by Saturn. How very interesting that Saturn is ruling our approach. If we conform to the will of the soul, it is ruling our approach to hierarchy, and Saturn, interestingly, is ruling the hierarchy's approach to Shambhala. We have to conform to certain laws and rules and requirements. Even the hierarchy has to conform to fit itself to be a true recipient of the Shambhala force. In the case of humanity, this pull comes via the hierarchy. You know, you feel something is abstracting you into the center of love and closer to the Christ. And apart from that hierarchy, mankind cannot today surmount or properly handle the crisis. Now think about that. Think about that for a minute. Oh yeah, we can do it ourselves, right? The first-rate personality thinks it can do everything itself. But no, there's a crisis upon us, and without the return of the hierarchy, and what Christ saw, I think, in the Garden of Gethsemane, without that kind of supervision, we, humanity, would be in trouble. You know, you know when you have a young child, you don't leave them unsupervised. You look in and make sure you know what's happening. So apart from hierarchy, humanity cannot surmount the crisis. You kind of wonder, apart from Shambhala, can hierarchy deal properly with the huge initiatory changes which are taking place on our planet, as within our planetary chain, a fourth initiation is being taken. Okay, this should be remembered and should speed the work of the disciples and aspirants of the world as they struggle for human liberation and to bring about divine intervention. It is the reappearance of the Christ, but of course he's a member of Shambhala, even though he's the head of the hierarchy. So let's just say that if we have the avatar of synthesis and the spirit of peace, and if we have the Buddha, whose home is within Shambhala, we definitely have divine intervention, not just spiritual intervention. We have divine intervention. Now, the last great, the intervention desired should come via the hierarchy. It's not always just a direct hit if it is not to be too destructive in its effect. And sometimes we are warned about the great epidemics that could befall humanity as the cleansing occurs if we don't straighten out our ways. I was just reading something, and so many people are coming to the idea that a vegetarian diet of the right kind can save humanity and save the planet. Kind of interesting where it's coming from the scientific community and those who are interested in the ecology question on the earth. The last major intervention in Atlantean days came via Shambhala, I suppose, directly, and resulted in the partial destruction, notice partial, of entire continents and lands. Sometimes we're of the opinion that everything was destroyed, but no, America was the, United States was the center, we're told, of the old Atlantean continent, and it didn't get destroyed. So when we look at the Native Americans, they are at least physically related to the Atlantean types, and they didn't have to come from anywhere. They just were there, and they persist. Okay, so these three triangles of energy can therefore be seen as basic and determining in all planetary affairs. Now that's why we're studying them. Okay, you know, it's Great Bear, Sirius or Little Bear, and Pleiades, and then we go down a notch, and we have Leo, and Pisces, and Capricorn, and we go down a notch, and we have Saturn, and Uranus, and Mercury, and then we go down a notch, and we find what is happening on our planet with, well, we can't consider it familiar, it's not formed yet, but Shambhala, Hierarchy and Humanity. The right relation between these three is a bit like forming the right relation between the ajna at the top of the head and the Alta Major Center. It's not yet ready. Not yet ready. So this triangle is determining in all planetary affairs, and it goes down into the chakra system of the man and how that's being stimulated. I have consequently chosen to consider them in our efforts to comprehend this basic astrological science. Let's just say the great science of relationship and the science of triangles, they're all interrelated, and you cannot really ignore any one if you want to understand any one of them. Now the next meeting will be a morning meeting next week, and triangles of force or the planets will be our subject. We haven't, you know, gotten all that far, but you can see how intricate is this matter, and we just have to learn it. That's all. You know, no excuses. We just have to learn these things. It may take a while. Okay, that's all right. And eventually, as is the case with Master DK, we'll actually know something. So we began here. I have to copy this, okay, if you don't mind. Right here. I'm going to just copy this and come down here and set us up for the next time. And this time, this reading of number 26 is ended. And it went from page 439 to wherever we are, 441. Not very far, but a lot to discuss. And this occurred today on the 18th of January. And we're beginning number 27 next time, our academic reading, which is very important. We have a lot more academic reading to do, because after we finish this 100-page section, you know, Starling Hunter has been such an applied student of triangles, and he's assembled a lot of references that we really need to go over. So that will come about. And this is going to be the morning schedule for this one anyway. It'll be the night schedule usually during that week. And 441 to whatever. And it will be on the, I suppose, 25th. I'm sorry. Of January. And here again is the reminder of all the things that we're offering come very soon, even starting tomorrow with the sacred pentagram full moon approach. We're on the morning schedule now, so by the time we reach the evening, we'll, you know, you can tune in with us. You will lead that, and it'll be the normal link for YouTube. Thank goodness that link stays stable, and we don't have to be changing it all the time. All right. Now, friends, I realize I've gone on and on here, but maybe you've been taking some notes, if you could stand it, and there's something you are responding to or want to say or find of interest to yourself. I know, that as the U.S. becomes more aware of our change of offering them more, I do see some U.S. people here, a few. So our numbers will grow in this, and it's to be more open and more informative to a whole group of people that we're sort of changing our method. So, do you have anything you would like to propose in terms of what we have discussed? Any thought which arose for you? Any sense of the Shambhala connection with the triangle of hierarchy and the triangle of humanity? DK said that esoteric astrology was his most occult book. Why? Because it dealt entirely with the matter of energy. And to be more occult than a treatise on cosmic fire, that's an amazing thing to me, because I consider cosmic fire, which is written only for initiates, really for fuller understanding, to be extremely occult book. So he really does deal with esoteric astrology as a book which is deep into occultism. So is there anything? Yes, I seem to see a hand. Hold on. And if I can I'll just find that hand. Yeah, it's Frida. Yeah, okay, Frida, go ahead.
Hi, Michael. Can you hear me?
Very well, thank you, Frida.
Okay, great. I'm also listening to your externalization of the hierarchy. So I was pretty much struck by almost DK saying the same thing in both sections regarding the Shambhala force.
He does repeat from a different angle. Yeah, he does. Yeah.
So on 108 of externalization, he talks about the effects of this widespread stimulation have been all that was anticipated, and so-called evil results of the Shambhala force upon ambitious and powerful personalities in all countries and all schools of thought have nevertheless been offset to some extent by the growth of sense of relationship and everywhere by the spread of the Christ energy, which generates understanding and goodwill. But basically, we were just talking about how the Leo component of this force has stimulated those personalities. It's very much, I don't know what the difference of time when these two books were written, but you can see the kind of the same message coming through there.
Yeah, it's so true. And DK said an interesting thing. He said, "Look, I don't know. Be careful that you got a something. You got to put yourself on mute for just a second. Otherwise, we're going to get an echo." He said, "I don't know what is the personal horoscope of Hitler, because he had not really studied it, but I do know I have studied his soul horoscope, and the factor of Leo is very, very impressive and prominent in the horoscope of his soul. So, that Leo energy was used by these dictators. It was prominent in Mussolini's chart, external chart. He was a Leo, I think so, with Scorpio rising. And in Japan, who the symbol was the rising sun, obviously Leo is implicated there with the sun rulership. So it can lead to all kinds of abuses. What's interesting is oftentimes when something from the dark forces shows up, a lower type of egotistical Leo energy is also to be found. But of course, it also represents the heart. It represents the heart of the sun. It represents the central spiritual sun. And so the higher spiritual application of Leo, heights of service are reached in Leo and also in Aquarius, offsets this very negative energy that the counterforce took advantage of. So, and that's the kind of side that we have to stand on to provide this internal offsetting energy of love, wisdom from the people who are strictly involved in the expression of the will. He also said, look, coming up, we're going to have a lot of mental magicians. They're going to be reincarnated again. They won't have the factor of love expressing. They'll just be mental magicians, okay? And they'll go after selfish objectives. Now, you people, you have to counter that with white magic, the magic of the soul, which involves the love energy. So when we're involved here with the Tibetan and theosophy and all that kind of thing, the whatever our rays may be, the development of the love energy is really a saving force in the dangers that are going to be presented with highly technical, technological, subtle, powerful energies, which could upset everything destructively unless there's sufficient love. So we know what we have to do. Leo's a wonderful sign, you know, but in the early days, it can lead to egotism. And if it goes too far, it can lead to megalomania. And we do see occasional megalomaniacs walking the earth. We had in the last war, we certainly had a number of them, and Hitler was the foremost of them. Also, Mussolini was there, and others, others in different countries. They just thought so much of themselves that they became, you know, as DK says, untouchable, the combination of the first and fifth ray energy. Okay, anything else, Frieda? Are we good?
No, that was really good, but it was just nice to see the two. It's like the two webinars have come together. Yep. There in terms of the message.
They kind of overlap. And, you know, what I want to say is, you know, Frieda brought to attention yesterday, I finished a three-hour program on the externalization of the hierarchy. And I have a timeline that Olivia has suggested, you know, just for simplification, the view about when will the reappearance of the Christ take place. Well, we really don't know, but we do know certain things that have to be fulfilled. And a lot of people are rushing it, if you know what I mean. The age of Aquarius has not yet fully begun, and we still have a lot to deal with the sixth ray force and with the Piscean waning force. It's not going to be overnight. Some people think that 2025 will come along, and that will be the reappearance of the Christ. And some people have gotten so antsy and anxious about it that they think that the Christ is hiding in London somewhere, and the press has to discover him. You know, I mean, a lot of nonsense appears. We have to be very, very patient, because there's a three-part series of bridging treatises that have been will have been offered by the Tibetan. He's offered two, and starting in 2025, the third part will come. Well, until we've seen what he has to say, until we've assimilated that considerably, we're just not going to expect the Christ to suddenly appear. There's too much preparatory work, and the hierarchy and its initiates, go to page 699 of externalization of the hierarchy, it's not ready yet. It's just not ready. Too much to do. So what I'm doing right now is working through the essays in the externalization of the hierarchy. I've begun right on the eve of the Second World War, 1938, and now I'm into 1939. And, you know, you'd say, well, that's history. You know, that already passed. But he says so many things to disciples which are of such importance that you don't dare ignore what is said there. And then later, after the whole book is finished, it'll be a while, I'll go back and catch the very beginning of the book, the first 60 pages or so. But I wanted to get right into the war, which was so conditioning of our present circumstances. So if you want to find that externalization, I think, BL, we are posting that on Makara, is that correct?
Yes. Yes. If they go to Makara, then they can look at you know, the MDR commentaries and scroll on down until you find externalization of the hierarchy. And you know, they're all there. I've posted up through 7 was the one I got this morning, right?
Okay, fantastic. I really appreciate that. Yeah, that's it. Well, we don't know how long that will be, but the essays are wonderful. And when you see how the hierarchy acted during World War II, it is extremely illuminating. Now, we're in the middle of the, you know, the third phase of that war, only it's psychological and mental at the moment. And that's where we have to keep it. So thank you, BL, for getting those things up on Makara. Appreciate that very much. Okay. Okay, and thank you, Frida. Okay, so now Anne Veronica looks like here. Okay, and we also have something from Joe.
It's a long thing from Joe. Do you have any additional thoughts related to the law of assembly and the working through of these energies in the triangles, particularly in relation to the effect of the Leo-Saturn flow from hierarchy through to humanity, and any evidence of how that might be working out in our present world condition? Would the recent concentrated service meditation for a European unity, let me scroll down, relate in any way to the working out of this influence?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, from the second-rate point of view, very much so. There are issues with that. There are issues to preserve the unity of the European Union. And all of those energies have to come together in order to do that, but especially the second-ray energy of unity, because, you know, let's just say that London is a different planetary center than Geneva, but they have to relate in the most cooperative way, which in general they have the capability of doing, because there are certain astrological and ray commonalities to be found there. But the thing that we have to avoid following the potential exit of Great Britain or of United Kingdom from the European Union is the fact that others may say, well, we'll go too. And the whole thing can, you know, then start to break up, and people will look for their own selfish advantage, and the experiment of Master R will have been unsuccessful, because this great European bloc can be very, very important in terms of its age and its understanding, having been the major focus of the last war, having learned a lot about human relations, having learned what is service. We cannot sacrifice the unity of Europe. And so this whole second ray expression is extremely important. As far as the law of assembly, the last time I talked to Sanat Kumara, he said he could handle it himself and he didn't need my input. So basically, basically he takes from whatever is available at the time. He knows the archetype, he knows the divine plan, he knows the cycles, and he assembles available energies according to what really is needed, according to his assessment. And about such things as that, well, you know, what can we know? We just know that this Shambhala, hierarchy, humanity, triangle is still in process. And we're just trying to make the most of the Antikorana, of the divine will, of the Shambhala impacts as they are occurring, of the great teaching we've been given, assimilating, understanding. We have our task opened up and set before us. As far as what all the details may be under this law of assembly, it's a strictly Shambhalic matter, and there's no way, I suppose, that even members of the hierarchy are not going to really know how Sanat Kumara, with his unique vision, puts all of this together. So I'll just beg off on that question and just say we have enough on our plate, and we have to learn what is the divine will. That's our curriculum. What is love? How do we express it? How do we blend love and mind? You know, we have to learn those things first before we can make application to such lofty processes. That's all I can say about it. Now let's see. Here from Ann Veronica, is it? Are both the higher mind and the secret doctrine on the same day?
I took care of that, Michael. I took care of that.
Oh, fantastic. Wow, I see a check mark, and I'm really happy because I'm just the wrong person to ask. Okay, thank you. All right, appreciate that. Okay, and externalization, as I've said, you know, making progress with that slowly, slowly. And but how you might study these things, it can be, you know, you're going to have a program that plays video on your computer. And just when you're not sure of something or what was said or you want to think about it, just stop the flow of the video. Think about it and then go on. You don't have to listen to it as a all in one fell swoop. I think that would be the best way. That's what I would do if I were listening to material and that's what I used to do. I used to go out jogging and I'd have the cosmic fire in my Walkman, you know, or something like that. I just, when he said something that really arrested my attention, I just stopped the tape, or I went back a little bit and heard it again. Then I thought about it, you know, all the time running along. I just didn't pass it by and say, oh, well, you know, what was that? And, you know, on to the next thing. Stop and think. Stop and meditate. Take a little longer, of course, but that's what I would recommend. Okay, what am I missing anything else? Okay. Okay, who's up? Anybody up that wants to speak? Or wants to ask, etc. Look, it's heavy material, isn't it? You know, some of us, but the new esoteric astrology is not like the personal astrology with which we may be so familiar. It's much more solar systemic, cosmic. It's much vaster in its scope, and it has to do with great theosophical learning and cycles and so forth. So just be patient with yourselves. That's all. Just be patient, and it will fall into place. And when you say, well, why should I study these great big things when I can't even handle the little things? I would simply say, look, the context in which we are working is of the utmost importance. And by understanding the big movements, much more light can be shed upon the little factors that we have to deal with every day. The study the big, learn about the little, study the little, learn about the big. It's a two-way street. So just keep on moving towards the kind of, planetary omniscience, which Master DK seems well on his way to attaining. That's the great opportunity here. Anything else that you want to deal with before we get into a little a triangle review, and I hope Tuya will be able to help us. I've got the PowerPoint up at the point where we usually enter. So any further questions or statements? Okay. You are the survivors. You lived through this last presentation. Not everybody did. But okay, you live through it. So that's it. All right. So now what we'll do is, okay, we know where we're starting next time. I think so. Yes, we do. And then,
Michael, can you do the meditation?
Yes, sure. It'll be just short good. And sweet. Okay, very good. Maybe one of our dogs is having some issues, so I think it may be the case.
That's correct.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I will do it. Okay, friend. So I'll do my best, okay? All right. So we'll let in the white light. We work with often with two kinds of light. Sometimes it's the white light, which is particularly good at banishing fear and other things. And also then the light orange, golden orange light. But we think about the triangles network somehow connecting us all and bringing the soul is light, he tells us often, bringing the light into our daily living. So we are pervaded by this light. And we remember that every morning, DK, before we really go about the day's activities, either to sit up in bed or sit on a chair, whatever, and link up with the soul and with, he says, with me, your friend, with the Master DK, your friend, every day. And you will, by doing this, you'll create a triangle of light between your soul. About, you know, here I would say, think about the solar angel, part of it infusing the causal body, and think about Master DK and his influence working in the higher mind, and then think about your head center. And you're going to fix this triangle in your consciousness. The apex is pointing downward towards the top of your head. This is what it will look like, at least, you know, a representation. And the color in this case will be the golden orange color. Even now, just think of Master DK influencing life on your soul level, and of the solar angel, a graduate, you know, a graduate released from the cosmic physical plane altogether, and returning, having its influence on your causal consciousness and your head center being stimulated. So from the higher mental plane to your head center. Just pause with that for a little bit. And he asks us, you know, to bathe in this light as if we were bathing in the waters of the sea, bathe in that color and leave it to him. After that, leave it to him. We can trust him to do what has to be done, and it can go far in helping us solve our issues, our problems. We align with, you know, the great spiritual forces above us. It's pretty well a triangle, but the souls are called triangles, interestingly. But we also have the six-pointed star, and we're just aware above our head of that very strong spiritual source. You know, when we do our triangles work, we don't want it just to be perfunctory. We want to feel the energy as we are working. So the alignment is necessary. And just think for a moment, you know, you're related at least probably to two other people in one triangle, and maybe some of you have 10 or 20 or more. So think about your own little group of workers, co-workers, where they are and how you're related to them in triangular formation. And it's your little part in helping to make and sustain the network of triangles. You know, every you go through the names, you say the great invocation when it's all over, and you see them as soul-infusing personalities, but basically as the soul in incarnation. You know, you're not just looking at the personality here when you work with any of your triangles. You're trying to sense the soul behind the person that you see before you. And it begins to expand into a great network of triangles in every country and crossing countries and continents, weaving together energy patterns that can respond to the soul and to the soul of humanity. And realize it is important work. You know, it says this work, he says, must go on. He doesn't always use the word must, you know, but here he does. Behind it all, three great beings, residents now in Shambhala, and they were, think of it, planetary logoi in the previous major solar system. That's how great these three Buddhas of activity are. They each have interesting functions, and there's so many things going on their planet that they are responsible for. So if emergency comes, they can deal, being a triangle themselves, a high Shambhalic triangle, they can deal with the triangle's network provided it is provided for them. And there's our link together. Our own little network, the human network of triangles, and the three Buddhas of activity. This is all a real thing, and we have to treat these esoteric factors as real. And to see the whole earth as if this triangular interrelationship etherically is really in process and a very important spiritual structure. And we say the great invocation together, thinking of our triangular group and thinking of the whole network and thinking of the connection of the Buddhas of activity. And of course, somehow, you know, maybe Sanat Kumara is the very heart of every triangle. One can think of the Christ in that role, but maybe from a still higher point of view, eventually it will be Sanat Kumara. So, from the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Oh. So remember, this work must go on. So the Triangles Network can be fortified, maybe. So the story goes anyway, apparently coming from Alice Bailey. 100,000 triangles exists, you know, living triangles. And then the turn can happen. It's one of those stories, you know, that circulates around the cult groups, but might be true. Anyway, it's a figure to aim for. And eventually, a major plan that hierarchy has will be manifested in humanity because of the spiritual content of the network will be much protected from the forces of evil. That's really important. This is just, you know, to give you the opportunity to help us along in a financial way as we try to reach you with every possible program that we can think of that might be of value for you. So I'll just use this as the last slide, and we'll think, you know, we're educating ourselves in this question of what really is the Triangles Project. How far does it reach? What can we understand about our planet and our solar system and our local cosmos and the divine plan when we understand what's going on in the triangles? So we will simply persist. We will simply persist as best we can, gathering more understanding as we go, and becoming more effective workers. So do uphold your triangles obligations, remembering what the Tibetan said, the work must go on. Anyway, we have lots going on, as you have seen, and here in the chat box, just copy it all, you know, just cut and paste it. And that will give you a chance to participate over the next few days for our Aquarian-related activities. Remember, Aquarius is the particularly the sign of the hierarchy. It's the sign of world service. It's the sign of the new age. It's a major, major distributive sign, and it's related to Shambhala strongly and to some hidden constellation out there. Very interesting. So we're now going to begin to celebrate the approach of the Aquarian energy. Tomorrow morning, we continue with the work of the Soul of Nations, and then and we also have in the evening, you know, the sacred pentagram approach. And then, let's see, do I have Do I have this? Yeah, I think I do. Maybe a little bit. The ingress of the sun into Aquarius, we start at 8:02 GMT. Is that, would that be correct? I hope so. Then the pre-full moon will come up next on the 21st and the 20th, I guess, in the evening, and then the actual full moon very early in the morning on the 21st. And then, as has been written, to be announced, the Aquarius solar fire ritual meditation. I'll try to find a time to bring that in. Okay, everybody, thank you very much. We thank you for your presence and for your meditation. And, you know, it's going to be a big study, but get used to it. It's okay. It's okay to study hard for many lives. Okay. Lots of love, many blessings, and we'll see you soon. Bye-bye for now.